Hello and welcome to episode one from the first season of Broad Talent's Create Podcast, the podcast that aims to promote creativity, especially with the younger listeners about to embark on their own creative journeys, whilst also hoping that any listener of any age will enjoy what we have to say. Colm Keegan here, and we've got a really, really exciting opening show for you all today. I'll be checking in with Broad Talent co-founders Darren and Lydia from her HQ before chatting with our very first guest of the series, a Glasgow film director and very close friend of Broad Talent, Mr. Doug King. Hello to everyone out there listening, and welcome to the first season of our brand new Create podcast. Over the next few weeks, we're going to be exploring the world of the creative industries, the fastest growing industry in the UK today. We're going to be chatting to people within the industry, routes they took to where they are today, and how our education system can keep up with this rapidly growing market. Over the course of the next few weeks, we're going to be speaking with people worldwide and try to see what other countries are doing to achieve the same goal. But before we begin, we would like to pay a special thanks to our sponsors, Firstport, for making all of this possible. We look forward to working together over the coming weeks ahead. Welcome to the Create Podcast. So I am here with Darren Osborne and Lydia Everett. You are very welcome, and our podcast is now out there. We are now officially podcasters. How are we getting on, guys? How are we feeling?
Doing well.
Yeah, all good.
It's been some week. We've had the pilot episode that's gone out publicly now. So I can now reveal that within 24 hours of the podcast going out there, we have had over 146 downloads. So to everyone who has had a listen, thank you very much. To everyone who shared, thank you very much. And one thing we should point out as well is whatever platform you listen on, so if it's on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Google or TuneIn, wherever it is, if you subscribe to Broad Talent on that platform, well, then you will be notified when our episode is released, which is going to be every Thursday between now and Christmas. So there was a few comments that came through. Lydia, was there anything that was written on Facebook?
Yeah, we were so excited by all the love that we received, just the encouragement saying what a great podcast it was, and also just how excited you guys were hearing the young people's voices and how inspirational that was as well. So thank you guys for getting in touch. We'd love to hear more from you.
Absolutely. I think that was a common thread about a lot of different platforms. Was it was great that people could actually hear some of the young people from the project as well. And as you said, hearing their voices, and they came up with some really, really good ideas as well. So that's something that it was brilliant to be able to do in the pilot episode as well. Darren, you're sort of involved to the website and everything. A lot of people are wondering if they can get in touch with us via the website, or some people are even answering or asking us the questions about sponsoring projects or anything like that. So what's the best approach that anyone who is thinking along those lines can take?
Yeah, so if you visit, we've got a podcast page on our website that you can visit. It's got all information about if you'd like to maybe sponsor an episode or a season for it. All the sponsorship money that we receive will be used to put on free to access creative programs for young people. So any money that does come in, that is what we will use it for. There's also like a virtual tip jar that we're hoping to get up and running in the next week or so, where people can give donations that again will go towards putting on these kind of creative workshops in areas of high deprivation in Scotland. There's also, like, if people want to just participate, again, we've had comments and stuff obviously on the social media channels, but you can submit questions or voice notes that you want to be read out or played on future podcasts. Brilliant. So if you want to ask a question to a guest, you can take part that way if you want to.
Absolutely, yeah. And we've got all of our guests lined up for the eight episodes between now and Christmas. But I mean, I saw one of the questions came through on Instagram as well, of somebody saying that if they were a teacher and they had a recording of some of their class as well, could they pass that on? And I thought that'd be great. You know, we mightn't get a chance to play everything that we get, but I mean, this is a creative hub, and anyone around the world that has any sort of footage or recordings of their involvement with creativity, pass it on and we'll try our best. If we can't include it in a podcast, we can put it into an Instagram post or something, you know, so please do pass on everything you have. We're really excited. This is episode one of the season, and we're going to be chatting with a good friend of Broad Talent's, Doug King, who's a very successful film director here in Glasgow. To everyone who has downloaded an episode, listened to an episode, shared an episode, thank you very much. This is the episode one of our brand new season. And I hope that you enjoy not only the series, but this episode where we chat with film director Doug King. Lydia and Darren, thanks a million for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our guest today is Glasgow-based writer-director Doug King, whose debut feature film was nominated for a BIFFA Discovery Award. His short films have been nominated for 3 BAFTA in Scotland NT Awards and have been shown at festivals all around the world, including the BAFTA-qualifying London Short Film Festival, Glasgow Short Film Festival and Aesthetica. In 2017, he was awarded the John Braeburn Grant for the Film and Television Charity and was selected for the Edinburgh International Film Festival Talent Lab. During this podcast chat, which was recorded last week, Doug alludes to his debut feature film Super November, which was premiered at the Glasgow Film Festival in 2018, as well as his brand new short movie Do No Harm, which was released yesterday, Wednesday 28th of October. We are absolutely thrilled to welcome Broad Talent's very close friend, Glasgow film director Doug King, as our first guest to the Create Podcast. So Doug, thanks a million for taking the time out of your really busy schedule to have a chat with us and also to be our very first guest on this Create Podcast series. No better person to launch the series with other than yourself, Doug. So thanks very much.
Oh, fantastic. I didn't actually realise I was going to be the first. So
I thought I would wait and break the news to you in person just so I can see your reaction as well.
So this is a bit like, you know, when a ship's about to go to set sail and somebody smashes a wine bottle off of it, but then if that doesn't work, then all the sailors think they're cursed.
Exactly. So if this podcast series amounts to nothing, we'll go back to the origin of why and point the finger at yourself, Doug. but no pressure though. But 2020 has obviously been a strange year for everyone. But maybe you can fill us in on some of the work you've been doing, Doug, because this was the year that your movie Do No Harm was scheduled to be released over the summer and then that was put back. So maybe you can fill in the listeners on how that's been and what it's all about.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I'm kind of glad that it could be worse. I could have been going into production. I know lots of friends that I've had movies cancelled that they've spent years trying to get off the ground, and literally a week before it's just crumbled in front of them. So I'm lucky in that respect. Yeah. But
yeah,
I was able to have the film finished this year, around about February, which it took an appalling length of time considering it's 15 minutes long. It's a short film. But
it's amazing how long these things take. I mean, you've got so much more experience, but I'm always really baffled by how long it takes to record something that, you know, even from a music side of things, that it could be, you know, to get 10, 20 seconds of footage sometimes can take hours. So like for a 15 minute short movie, how long roughly would you leave aside?
Well, this is a thing that is, it depends, I guess, how you're going to be going about your production, but it's really as long as as short as you want to make it. But I guess from one of my, right, so it basically took 2 years to make this short.
Wow.
So we went through what was called the Scottish Film Talent Network at the time, through their Scottish Short Scheme, which is like really, really competitive sort of process to try and pitch it. And they develop your story with them, and then you pitch it, and then they fund a certain amount of them. And that's now been replaced with something very similar, what's called Short Circuit. So that's the sort of the new one to apply to at the moment, and that's all funded through BFI. So, but then on the other side of it is that me and Darren, who I think did the teaser episode, we were flatmates back in about 2009, and I used to just drag him into all my short films whenever I could. But for one of our films called A Good Mate, which is one of the first films I made, it kind of got a bit of a splash. So I basically wrote the film in about 5 days because I was in Bristol for this Encounters Short Film Festival. I was really just inspired from watching so many shorts. It was just, you know, I basically was there just by myself in a hostel, getting up the morning, going and watching a ton of shorts, talking to fellow filmmakers, trying to chat up funding bodies and producers and everybody. And then I'd go back and my brain would be absolutely buzzing and I would end up writing a script in my top bunk.
No way.
Hostel in Bristol. Basically wrote it in those 5 days, came back up, cast another actor, and then within just one day we'd shot a film, then I edited it in about 2 days, and then I submitted it off, and that film ended up getting nominated for a BAFTA Scotland New Talent Award for Darren for his acting performance in it. So that's something that's a complete, really quick turnaround. But I mean, if you look at that film now, I would never, like, that's just me shooting it and being the entire crew.
Yeah.
In my flats, with a hell of a lot to learn and compare it to Do No Harm, where it's went through a really rigorous development process where you're talking with script editors and you're having to get things signed off. You're with a crew of, you know, 20 plus. You're shooting it over about 5 days. And then you've got quite an intensive editing period after that. So,
wow, my God.
I mean, the less you know, probably the quicker the process.
Yeah.
the more you get into it, and the more when you start thinking, oh, actually, I kind of want to go legit and I want to get money, then as soon as you start thinking, I need to get money to make it.
It's a black hole.
It's a black hole of time, of space and time. And then before you know it, you're like, I haven't made a film in 2 years, it can be quite...
Well, Doug, one of the key buzz terms that we're hoping to discuss over the podcast series is the idea of collaboration. So regardless of what creative field you're in, collaboration always plays a massive role in that. So just when you're talking there about having a team of 20 people on a movie set, do you ever feel, as the film director, a sense of responsibility or... in any way intimidation, or do you just enjoy the process of allocating various roles to people and watching all of these micro projects unravel to sort of form the greater good of the what turns out to be the movie?
Well, I think I personally love it when I've got a full size crew, because you know, people working on that crew, like, they are so much more experienced than any director that's on set, because they're making films throughout the year, whereas, you know, as directors absolutely scour the floor for crumbs, you know.
Yeah, that's really interesting, yeah.
If we're lucky, we're shooting something every 2 years.
Yeah.
If we're very lucky. So for me, like, I always want to make sure that on set it doesn't feel, like, hierarchical. I'd hope that everybody would feel that they could chip in. But you want to try and create an atmosphere on set where it's very open, and you know, everybody we've got on set is just extremely talented, and I think you'd be daft if you're always thinking, "Oh, I know the correct answer for this." If you're not quite sure the answer as to how to solve something, I'm always quite keen on saying this is the effect.
So that's really interesting. Then, instead of dictating how something should be, just giving them a taster of what you're trying to feel and letting them fill in the blanks. It's a really interesting approach. But Doug, I would like to come back to the movie Do No Harm for a second before we dive into your past a little bit. Do No Harm is a movie that's clearly getting massive appraisal at the minute, nominated for Best UK Short at the Raindance Film Festival. But as director, when you're working with extremely experienced actors like Claudie Blakely or Sharon Rooney, Claudie Blakely from TV series called The Midwife or movies like Pride and Prejudice, and Sharon Rooney, who's just come from Tim Burton's recent remake of Dumbo, as someone who's clearly never been in a film set before, what's it like directing actors of that level of experience?
For me, I think you really have to sort of open the door for them creatively and make sure that they at least are... you're working together, you're a little team, and I try to, it can be quite weird sometimes, but yeah. Even if I've got three actors in one space, I'll try my best in whatever way just to speak to them individually, and that could involve just literally whispering in people's ears.
Oh, wow.
But it's more that you want the actor to know that you're just in this little gang, and then you're trying to create something together and it's very personal. It's just you two. Nobody else on set is really involved in it. It's just you two. It's your little thing.
Brilliant.
And you're sort of trying to grow it as much as you can. And you want them to be excited about it.
That's really interesting. I can kind of relate to it a little bit as a singer when you're trying to forget about all the unnecessary distractions in your head and focus on just the song and the performance. You know, I could see how that personal touch would really, really help. So tell us about the premiere of the movie. That was meant to be over the summer gone by, but that had to be rescheduled then, did it?
Yeah, originally it was going to be at Edinburgh International Film Festival, which I love Edinburgh. I absolutely love that it's going to premiere at Raindance, which I think is just, you know, is an excellent film festival, and it's proper. It really properly supports independent filmmaking as well. So I'm really pleased from that.
Brilliant.
And
the release then is in?
Well, 28th.
Next week,
October. And I think they're kind of doing a Netflix-style thing where all the films are available there. And there's a pass you get for the duration of the festival. It would be an absolute bargain because there's a lot of shorts, but it's a big feature film festival.
Brilliant.
As well.
Brilliant. Well, congratulations for, you know, I know a few musician friends of mine who have plowed away and are hoping to release an album this year, which I just think, given the circumstances, is amazing. But you know, plowing away and actually getting a full film out, released, you know, premiered, given the circumstances, is some achievement, Doug. So massive congrats.
Thanks, Colm.
Doug, what I would like to do now is go right back to the beginning. Growing up in Clydebank in Glasgow, can you talk to some of the listeners? Because, you know, what's great about having a chat with yourself is that it ties the circle for broad talents a lot as well. You know, that we sort of originated ourselves in Clydebank. A lot of the early work that we did was in Clydebank. You were involved at the very start as well. You know, the very first Create Festival that we did, you were one of the speakers. And here we are doing our Create podcast, which, again, a funny story about that we were meeting ahead of one of the, I think it was one of the projects we had in Loretto. And we were meeting with yourself and you threw out a comment one of the days about some of the things that we could do as broad talent. And you mentioned a podcast. And I remember all three of us at the time were thinking, that would be really great. Maybe at some stage we should do a podcast. And it never, for one reason or another, we never had the time to fit it in. And here we are, however many years later, doing the podcast. And you're the first guest. So so maybe you plugged it so that we could try and pitch your work.
I guilt tripped you into it. I can build it. If he'd said, you know, then we should put... Maybe it's subliminal because I've kind of... I remember now that you said that, but it was subliminal. I was basically, maybe you should do a podcast, but I should guest.
Yeah. Host. Yeah, wait until I have a short out and have me as your first guest. That'd be great.
I've seen your lineup, so I said to my partner, Katie, that Broad Talent have assembled a fantastic lineup, which is just an absolute credit for what Broad Talent is all about. And she said, oh, I'm sure yours will be the most listened to.
Well, we'll pass on the stats at the end of the series, Doug. But Doug, what I'd like to do now is go right back to the beginning for you growing up in Clydebank here in Glasgow. And one of the questions that I often like hearing being asked on different podcasts is, how do you feel your surroundings as a child has shaped you as an adult? So, you know, my experience for listeners who are perhaps overseas, my experience of Clydebank is one full of history of the shipyards or the Blitz during the war, and today a real sense of community around the area. How important or relevant has the background of Clydebank been to you growing up?
Yeah, well, I think I've been thinking about this recently, and you know, I think I feel like I've always wanted to be a film director, and I think my earliest memory is going to see The Little Mermaid.
Really?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think, which is quite a late memory because I must have been about four. But I think that is my first, it's such a, like, I can really smell it. And I can smell the carpet. And I think when we're talking about, like, an area sort of shaping you, then I actually think that the cinema there, UCI, was actually, it was AMC, it must have been at the time, but my earliest memory of it is as of UCI.
Yeah.
It was one of the first multiplex cinemas in Glasgow and in Scotland.
Oh, right. So there was always a bit of a buzz when going to it.
Yeah, it was basically 10 screens. And I actually think in its first year, it had over 1 million visitors. So what? That's the same as the Transport Museum.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. So when you're sitting there as a four-year-old watching the Little Mermaid, you know, what are you imagining? Like, just the whole world of film, or is it...
This is the thing, is that it's the sheer magic of it. So I didn't know how those images were getting on that screen. I didn't know if that was behind that screen, if something somehow was going on. And I think for quite a long time, I think probably more than most, I kind of really resisted reading films in a linear, logical way. Like I've always tapped into a very abstract, childlike way, where it's more about just happening the atmosphere of a film rather than any actual indication of following the story as to how it's going on.
Yeah. So you were always into the technicalities of a movie, even from a young age.
Well, no, I guess it's the feeling of it. So, okay. And I think that's the main thing, is that I'm kind of always trying to tap into, like, you know, I'd still struggle to define what exactly the feeling is of, I guess it's a wonder that I had back. But I remember just being feeling so scared of Ursula.
Yeah.
I loved how dark it went when she started whatever she was doing. I haven't seen it in years and years. But I also remember the little lights that were down the rows.
Oh, yeah.
Right on the floor, and I absolutely loved that. I was just phenomenal. And also the way that cinema is shaped is it's kind of like a slope, a very low slope, so you're looking up at the screen.
Yeah.
So, you know, cinema becomes larger than life if you're looking up at it. I actually really don't like Cineworld type screens where it's like you're almost
looking down,
like flat, you're kind of raised. Yeah. I love, you know, you need to bow down at cinema.
And I've often heard people describing stages in a very similar way, that for some reason, if you remove the stage, sometimes the person looks a lot more like a person. But when you go to a theater and you see them on stage, there's just this sort of like an elevation of they're in a different platform to the rest of us. So there obviously is something about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think I've never thought much of that from a theater perspective, but it totally makes sense. It's just something about you when you go into that cinema, like, it transcends life, and you're trying to figure out, it's so hard to put your finger on what that film is saying to you, because it's tapping into something I think quite primal was. But I also think I really do miss a 35mm film. I could remember seeing Jurassic Park and all kinds of stuff, and you would always have a like dust particles coming up like over the light. We would always kind of sit kind of near the back.
There's something very iconic about that image, isn't it?
I guess you can still kind of get that, but it's not, or something I love whenever there's a 35mm film print kicking about. Like, I've traveled through to Edinburgh to go and see stuff in 70mm.
No way.
I'll go and seek it out, because I think it's, and the scratchier the better. Like, I love it.
Again, every time you're talking, I'm always sort of translating it in my head in some sort of music equivalent, but it's sometimes it's the same when you have some of these vinyl records that you listen to as well, and it has that, you know, just when you mentioned the term scratchy, you know, that sound. And I hear a lot of artists now saying that when they recorded with that almost in mind of what it would sound like as the finished product, that when we have these now 2020 versions or mastered, or, you know, that it actually loses a lot of what that feeling of the actual record player was giving. You know, you can almost have too much of a perfected product now.
Yeah, I totally agree. Something's lost in it, but I can't tell you what it
is. Yeah, I know, just that. So were you one of these kids now, Doug, that would, you know, take out the camcorder and...
Well, one of the things that what I did was... For some reason, my dad would record like a omnibus documentaries on filmmakers and on his VCR.
Yeah.
And for some reason, that would just go into my rotation of watching, like Back to the Future or Ghostbusters or any Disney films. And then I would watch an omnibus special on John Ford. And there was no way I was understanding any of it, like none of it at all. But what I just loved was seeing the machinations behind how you make a film, like seeing John Ford sitting there in Death Valley and filming cowboys and horses, and just it blew my mind, like what was going on behind the scenes. But it was also just really kind of want to tap into the craft. And I guess I remember at the Create Festival, I put up a picture of Hitchcock, you know, just sitting watching an actor, but he's not by himself, he's in company of about 40 other crew.
Do you know, I still have that image in my head that I was actually going to ask you to explain that today for our listeners, that it's an image that I never would have considered. So if you could try your best to explain that iconic picture to the listeners and give them an image of what it was all about, that'd be great.
It's basically, you know, Hitchcock sitting right next to this huge camera because on a soundstage. I'm not actually sure what film it is. And he's basically right at the lens, because obviously at that time we wouldn't be able to go and watch a video of what we've just recorded. Like you won't be seeing that until, if he's lucky, the night after we've shot it. So he's sitting right at the lens, so he gets more of a picture of what's fair. He's watching this actor, and he's just surrounded by, I'd say, maybe about 40 crew. God knows what half of them do. And there was all sorts of equipment and stuff thrown around. And I was just always fascinated by it, because I think that even if it was just compositionally, or I don't know how he achieved it, but he looked as if he was alone watching his own movie. But he's actually, he could tell he was in his own place, just fully focused.
It really is one of these images that just perfectly explains and describes that the actors on set are just the tip of the overall iceberg in making a movie happen. But one of the things that we're hoping to discuss with all of our guests, Doug, is the impact their time in school had on them when ending up in their eventual careers. So, you know, as you know, Broad Talent tries to act as a bridge between education and creativity. So what I would like to ask and discuss with you was that, is there anyone who you feel acted as a source of inspiration for you growing up in school? Or, you know, looking back now, is there anyone that you would think was a major influence on the decision that you ended up making to become a film director?
Well, I guess it kind of taps into, like, just to give context when you're saying earlier, if I was a type of kid with a video camera, is that I basically, I kind of borrowed / stole. He never got it back. My granddad's video camera. Oh, yeah. And I first started shooting films, like stop motion films with Lego. And then I would rope in my little cousins who are about, you know, like 5 years old. I would shoot them as like my actors. And then how I learned to edit was that I'd have my video camera connected up to the VCR. And I would basically press play on the video camera, press record on the VCR, and then I would press pause on the VCR once that shot had finished. And then I had to go and find my next shot that I was going to use. So I'd have to fast forward, rewind.
No way. I'd have to try and figure out where that So how old were you, Doug, when you were doing all of this?
I was probably about 10, I think, when I first started.
Oh my God.
But if I didn't find it within 90 seconds, it would cut to black. So then I'd have a little, like, 2 second cut to black, which I didn't really want to happen. So after I did that, went to high school, I ended up sort of roping in Darren from Broth Talent and a couple of my other friends. And we were just like first year at school. And I would get them into my house and we would film these daft films, and then I would edit them on this VCR, and then once I would put it on a videotape, and then I would take it into, what I'd started to do was I would take it into the library, and there was a little sort of video type room, and I would put on screenings of the film, so in the library, come to your film, right?
And do many people show up?
Well, anybody who's in the library, I would say, come in and watch my film. I'm very, very shy. I was so shy as a child, but I knew I had to really force myself out of that comfort zone if I was to be a film director. So all of a sudden, the librarian would be going, why is he closing the blinds in this room? And I'm trying to create an experience here for whoever your soul has ended up in the library. But to get to your question now, is that my art teacher, Mr. Boland, got wind of these screens.
Yeah.
And then he was asking me how I was putting these together. And I was telling him I was editing using a VCR. And then he ended up looking into it. And before I knew it, like a couple of weeks later, he was saying to me, oh, I've got this software called Adobe Premiere. And, you know, it's up, I put it on this computer and you're free to use it whenever you want. But you can also use it for art if you want to make a film for art.
So you were teaching yourself. Were you able to get any sort of educational credits for that? Like, were you able to submit that as an art project?
Well, I was. I think I was in higher, but I don't think, I don't know now, but back then they wouldn't have realised the amount of work that would be of been put into those films.
And this would have been the time before popping onto YouTube and looking up tutorials of how to, you know,
definitely
how this works.
Probably, like, I don't even think I had internet at home at that time.
Oh my God. But I mean, so one question that before we move on from school, you know, you're talking about painted this picture of a shy kid, but yet you're still able to have the confidence of going over to ask people to watch the movies that you've made and go to the library. I mean, were you trying to gather a crew as well? I mean, that must take some confidence as well to be able to go over and ask people to join this movie you're making and then direct them when you're on screen as well, you know? So how would that have come about?
Just because I was so passionate about making these films, it helped me sort of overcome that sort of shyness, and that I had to try and the only way I could make these films was with other people.
Yeah.
And not only that, I had to try and get other people on board because they could do anything else with their time. But all of a sudden,
that's an amazing skill to even just to recognize that in yourself, that this is something that I don't naturally, you know, do. So I'm going to work on it and put myself out there, you know, because it's far easier to stay in your shell.
I think I still do it every time, to be honest. Like, if I'm at like a networking event at a film festival, I'm still sort of having to take a wee breath beforehand and sort of say, you know, you can kind of do this. It is a skill in itself. Been, you know, talking to people. I think some people, if you're more naturally introverted or more naturally extroverted, I think sometimes you can still come across as a, you know, as extroverted, but you know, you're still deep down still that introvert.
Interesting one. I know sometimes the way people are feeling and the way they're coming across can be slightly different.
Is interesting. But one of the funny things actually if Mr. Borland's listening, then thank you very much, because especially it's only when Darren was graduating from art school, and Mr. Boland had a great relationship with Darren as well. And I spoke to him then and I asked him, did people edit lots of films after me? He said, oh no, no one did. And he ended up taking it off the computer because it was taking up too much, like far too much memory on this computer.
Yeah.
And I was quite stunned by that, but then I also found out that it was effectively half his budget that he spent on that on Premiere. That was an incredible roll of the dice that he made, so I'm forever grateful for that.
Well, that's amazing, Doug. I mean, to think of the impact that decision Mr. Boland made on your life alone is actually quite incredible. But before we leave the topic of school, as an adult now looking back, is there anything that you now would recommend to a 14, 15, 16-year-old Doug King who's sitting in school today dreaming about being a big, famous film director? Any advice you'd have on what he or she should do, or routes to take, or projects to get involved with?
I think there's some brilliant organisations out now. You know, I think film education and film literacy is a lot more like, well, it's there's places available now, like Into Film. But there's also like local places in Glasgow, like GMAC, the Glasgow Media Access Centre. They do some brilliant. I'm teaching on there every Saturday right now through BFI Film Academy, which is great for people in their sort of late teens. But I think on the whole, you kind of, like, it's an important part of creativity is to try and find your gang, find your group of people. And it's whatever way you can do that. And I think that, you know, there are film clubs out there, and you just, I would say, go and find some film clubs and join them. And even if it's just watching films, you're not necessarily making any stuff. It's just, it's more about it's kind of scary because you start realizing that, oh, there's lots of other people that want to be filmmakers as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's also great because there's lots of other people that want to be filmmakers as well. And, you know, you want to try and help each other as much as you can and learn together.
But I think that's a really interesting and good point to make as a piece of advice for people to not fear other people who are also good at what they do. Because I think sometimes, and I've seen it as well, a lot, that when somebody is known in their area for being really interested in film direction, or if somebody's known for being a good singer or a good guitarist, and then they try and pursue that by taking it seriously and going to either college, university, or taking it a step further, and they surround themselves by people who are also good at that field, that it can be a huge sense of intimidation then, that they're no longer known as the person who's good at that because they're surrounded by other people who are also known for being good at that. So it is important to not fear other people for being, you know, also talented in that field, and actually learn from them, surround themselves by the most creative and talented people they can find.
I actually think I'll slightly change my answer here as well, Colm, because I think that most important thing is to be making films, you know.
Yeah.
And that could be, you know, the ability to do that now is amazing, because you could make films on your phone really easily, from shooting it to editing it on your phone. And I think that the more you do it, the better you're going
to
get.
So to round the circle, and again, I really appreciate you taking the time to fit in the interview, Doug. But, you know, if you were told from a younger self that you would eventually be sitting here as a film director, having worked on projects that were nominated for BAFTAs and Scotland's NT Awards, films that are being featured in various festivals, what does it feel like when you hear one of the works that you've been involved in, that you've directed, has now been nominated for something like a BAFTA? You know, what is that, just the ultimate recognition for, you're talking about all those hours that you put into the project, is that the icing on the cake to be recognized for doing all that work?
Well, it's frustrating because it can be really short-lived. because basically the only reason I make films is to make films, is to make more. So you make a film to make the next one.
Yeah.
So then it's almost like a wee sense of relief that you get, because you're going, oh, that could really help me make the next one. So it's you're just kind of hoping that that will just be a little tool that you can use to help you make that other your next.
Yeah, okay.
Oh. But yeah, no, you're right. I think there was a couple of times when Super November was released, and, you know, especially when Peter Bradshaw reviewed it for the Guardian, like that was incredible. And I think that maybe non-film people didn't quite understand how much of a buzz that was for me, because it was a 3-star review. Yeah. And but for me, people missed the point. Like, I've made a film for no money, and there it was in the Guardian, written by my favourite film critic. And to the left of it in print was the Palme d'Or winner, which got 5 stars. And then Robin Hood, which cost something like $180 million. To the Right, which got 2 stars, and then Shipping Around with Right.
Wow.
But I also was so, I keep on, I'm a worrier, because I'm still sort of worried about, you know, how can I get all this great stuff that's happening to us? How can I package all that together and make sure that I get to make another film? And then, a couple of friends kind of took me aside and just said, look, enjoy it.
Yeah.
Sort of enjoy this moment here, because it will be over in no time. Then you'll be and you'll be worried. You'll be thinking, oh, how come I didn't just relax and just enjoy how that was going?
I think that is important, definitely. I think you hear that across a lot of different fields, even if you're looking at sport or if you're looking at, you know, that if you can't appreciate the moments that are there to be appreciated and you're only focused, I mean, it's all well and good to have ambition and to want to try and achieve a lot of things, but if you can't enjoy the good moments, well then, why are you doing it?
I know. So I've had a wee word with myself, and a lot of times just sort of, especially it's a West of Scotland thing, but probably it's a UK thing, but you do sort of like nobody likes it if you sort of say, oh, I got nominated for this. Or
I know, it's the same in Ireland as well. Absolutely, yeah. You big yourself up and you're there to be taken right back down then, you know. Yeah. So
And basically, even close friends that you'd be surprised with almost feels as if, okay, it's my duty now to make sure he gets the floor.
But Doug, thank you so much for taking the time out. And just for anyone who's interested, I mean, you've given some really, really good advice. It's been a pleasure having you involved. As I said, you were one of the speakers in our very first project, the Create Festival. You suddenly planted the seed for this podcast series to happen, and you're our first guest. So it's been a pleasure having you on the Create podcast now. But if anyone is listening to you and interested in some of the movies you're talking about, Do No Harm, which is out 28th of October, Super November, you mentioned there as well, which was your debut feature. Where can they get access to any of this? Can they watch it if they were interested?
Well, I guess Do No Harm is going to be available at a Raindance Film Festival. And I think you can either buy a pass for the entire duration of the festival, then you've got great access to all these films. But I do think you can watch films individually as well. And pretty soon after that, it's going to be at Aesthetica Short Film Festival, and that's sort of the same deal, and you'll be able to watch Do No Harm there as well. So they're almost sort of back to back. So November is a good month to go and catch Do No Harm, and Super November is available on Vimeo on demand, but it's also on Amazon as well.
Check it out there, Doug. You're an absolute star. Thanks a million.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I really hope you've enjoyed this episode 1 from season 1 of our brand new Create podcast. A massive thanks to Doug for taking the time out of his busy schedule to have a chat with us. And we wish him enormous success on the release of his brand new short movie, Do No Harm, which was released this week. We'll be releasing a brand new episode from this podcast series every Thursday between now and Christmas. So you can listen to us on Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, or any of the usual podcasting platforms. If you like our content, please subscribe to our Broad Talent channel on any of those platforms and help share our episode across social media to try and get the word out. As always, please tag us in your comments so we can hear your feedback, or email us directly at hello@broadtalent.org. Join us next week on Thursday, 5th of November for episode 2, as we chat with Glasgow musician, filmmaker, songwriter and lead singer from indie pop band Bell & Sebastian, Stuart Murdoch. See you all then.